Hi, and welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast, where we talk about all things flute. If you're looking for more tips or lessons from Emily, please check out musigy.com for all the sheet music, transcriptions, albums, books, and flute lesson packages. That's musigy.com, musogy.com. Also, if you're looking for posters, fingering charts, or merch, you can head over at our merch store at store.theflutechannel.com for all your flute needs. If you want to help us on a monthly basis, you can also consider joining us over at Patreon for as little as $2 a month. This helps us make more great content for you. Check the description for more info. Now on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast. I'm Nick.
And I'm Emily.
How's it going, Emily?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hopefully everybody's doing great. We were on a little bit of a hiatus for the podcast, but we're back and we're going to be doing regular episodes, hopefully every other month again, and new stuff in store as well. And we've done a lot of things. A lot of things have happened in the past 5-6 months. We passed 150,000 subscribers, which is pretty amazing.
Yay!
Now we're at like 153. And it's all because of you guys that were doing this, and this is amazing efforts, and we love every one of you. You guys are so great. And yeah, we're going to do a little bit different format this episode. We're going to do a little interview with Wendy Rolfe. It's a pre-recorded interview that we're going to put right at the beginning, right after this, and then we're going to answer your questions. So during the interview, if you have any questions about flute playing or flute practicing or all the general stuff, about flute and music, just let us know and we'll try to line up all those questions after. But Emily, how did this all come about, the interview with Wendy, and also
So in March, last March, we were invited by the Berklee Flute Society. So the students at Berklee have a club basically, and they invited me to give a little masterclass, and then I also played with their flute choir at Harvard the next day. It was amazing. We had so much fun. They were nice and good, and yeah, it was great. And in that occasion, Wendy Rolfe, who's the flute professor at Berklee, I think there are three, but she's been there for a long time. She's a tenured professor there. And she, we met and we talked. And she talked about that project that she's a part of and with a lot of passion in Ecuador. And we thought it was interesting. She also sometimes brings flutes, of course, all of that very legally and as gifts to people because it's difficult to get flutes there. And she's really into helping the people there as much as she can because she believes in what they're doing. And we thought it was beautiful. And so we did that interview with her.
Yeah, so we're going to play that now. And then for those who are listening to this on the podcast form, if you want to go to the YouTube channel and check out the full video and see the video and everything, be sure to do that after this is done recording. And the recording itself is around 12 to 13 minute interview. So yeah, watch that. And also, if you want to watch more of those of that interview, we have an extended interview over on patreon.com/theflutechannel, along with two other interviews that Wendy did in Ecuador with the some of the musicians and organizers of the festivals there. So it's very interesting, and I would encourage you all to go to patreon.com/theflutechannel and see it there. It's free for everyone to watch those interviews, but if you want to have a more commercial-free experience about our channel in whole, that's where you got to go. If you pay $5 a month, you get our whole entire archive there on video format and other stuff as well for $5 a month. And it helps support us directly and makes us have even more content for you. So yeah, on with the interview with Wendy Rolfe, professor at Berklee College of Music.
Hello, Wendy Rolfe. Nice to have you on the Flute Talk Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Amelie. It's wonderful to see you again. We had a wonderful visit when you came to Berklee College of Music, sponsored by the Berklee Flute Society, last spring, you and Nicola. So it's wonderful to see you again. And we were happy to welcome you at Berklee. I'll tell you a little bit about myself as a flutist. I am very busy playing lots of flutes from many eras of flute playing, from the Baroque, a little bit of Renaissance, up through the classical and Romantic, on old flutes and copies of old flutes and piccolos. In fact, I just performed with Boston Baroque last weekend. We performed Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, and I was playing 8-key flute and 5-key piccolo, which is exciting. And also, I perform a lot of contemporary music. I specialized in that in my graduate work. My studies have been with various fantastic flutists. I'm very fortunate. At Oberlin Conservatory with the renowned late Robert Willoughby, at Manhattan School of Music with Harvey Solberger, one of the pioneers in contemporary flute techniques and contemporary flute music, and also with Lois Schaefer, who was the piccolo soloist with the Boston Symphony for many years, with Marcel Moïse, attending classes with Monsieur Jean-Pierre Rompal, and some Baroque flute lessons, although many of us who were starting out in the early instrument revival in the U.S. learned as we were going. And I was very, very fortunate to study with someone named Janice Smith when I was in junior high school. She ended up playing with the St. Louis Symphony for over 35 years. She was a wonderful pedagogue.
Wow, that's amazing. You do so many things. And and it was amazing also to meet you in the spring. I loved it. And I loved your students as well. Everyone was great. So you go in Ecuador and you have a program there that I'd like you to talk a bit more about.
I was fortunate to be invited to the International Flute Festival in Quito, Ecuador in 2005 by Maestro Luciano Carreira, who founded the festival about 30 years ago. My dear friend, the great Brazilian pianist Maria José Carrasqueira, has been going to that festival for a long time, and she spoke with Maestro Luciano about me. So I met many wonderful flutists there from Ecuador and from Europe and the United States and where Latin America, of course. And at that first festival, so that's the International Flute Festival in Quito, which is still going. It's right by the equator. So it's the festival in the center of the world. And at that first flute festival in Quito, I was very, again, fortunate to meet Leonardo León, who is the principal flutist of the Guayaquil Orchestra Sinfonica de Guayaquil, and Minerva Quintana, who's the piccolo soloist and second flutist of that orchestra. And 9 years ago, Leonardo León and Minerva founded the festival Perla del Pacifico. That's the nickname of the city of Guayaquil, which is in the south. It's on the coast, and it's where there's a lot of commerce because of the large river that runs from Guayaquil up into Ecuador. So Leonardo and Minerva and their friend Belén and Lady Lore founded this festival back, in 2014. So we teach students of all ages. Some at the festival 2 weeks ago, at the beginning of October, we had teachers who came and brought their students. Some people drove 8 hours over the mountains or took buses for 8 or 10 hours to get to the festival. And we give classes, we give concerts, we give workshops. And then the students and the faculty play together in the Chorale de Flautas, flute choir. This year we played all music from Ecuador, which was great, arranged for flute choir or written for flute choir. So my involvement is to help to support my colleagues in those countries, but it's a big challenge for many of them because the economies of many Latin American countries were affected by the oil prices going down, and then also the recessions we've had, and also greatly affected by COVID. So we really admire our colleagues there who really have to raise funds to put together the festivals, to pay the expenses. bring in the students, and we admire the students and their teachers who come to the festivals.
Efforts, so, yeah.
It's really human rights work through music. And we who go to the festivals are happy to volunteer our time to support this great work that they're doing. And again, it's wonderful to see. I met a boy who was 12 when I met him in March when I was there. Mateo, who's from Loja in the very south of Ecuador, was part of Peru at one time. And he played very well. His teacher, Monica, was there also. She brought him to Cuenca. Actually, I was in Cuenca, a little further north. But Mateo came 5 hours over the mountains to go to a class I gave. And then he just won the junior division of the flute festival, the flute competition that at the Festival Perla del Pacifico.
What would you say are the differences and similarities when you teach there versus when you teach in the United States?
Much of the repertoire is similar. People are very interested in 19th century and Baroque repertoire. They also, of course, play music from Ecuador. So much of the repertoire is similar. Some of the teaching methods are similar. One of the biggest differences, I was thinking about this question, is that to the best of my knowledge, they don't have the school music programs we have in the USA. I don't know about the school music programs in Canada. So in the USA, most schools are fortunate to have band programs, some more fortunate to also have orchestra and then choir. So students can start on lessons, and they're also often provided with instruments with which they can start to play. But in Ecuador, if someone sees this and I'm incorrect, please let me know. In Ecuador, I don't think they have the school music program. So students have to study privately. It's very difficult for them to find instruments. There's no flute shop in Ecuador. So people often have to go to the USA or Europe to buy a flute. It's just selective. And there are a couple of people who repair flutes, but not many. So it's hard to get instruments fixed. So one of the big differences is that they, their flute teachers are really starting them from scratch without the benefit of having had music in their schools. There are local conservatories and National Conservatory in Quito and music schools. But those are in addition to an outside of their primary education.
And so for that project in Ecuador, what are you hoping for the future for the project?
I think I, like others, really hope we can support our colleagues there. That's one of the most important things we can do. And I think sometimes they also feel isolated, even though there are many musicians around. So when we come, we help them to know that we support what they do and we admire it. I think, again, some of the challenges for them are financial because they don't have the foundations, the nonprofit foundations we have in the USA. They don't have the big flute companies that partially support the National Flute Association here. So I think one thing I'd love to see is some way for them to get more financial support to help pay their expenses. And there are, if I ever bought a lottery ticket, which I haven't, and won $1 billion, I would love to start an international foundation to support music. The only one I know of really is the Latin Grammy Cultural Foundation, which supports projects in Latin America and also scholarships for students to study here. Some of my students have had those grants, and that's one of my former students is the program director there, but Nanette Velez. So I would love to see in the future some way, and I don't know what it is because I don't know how this really works in those countries, of finding more support for the people who are putting on the festivals. They really do a wonderful job of finding the money to, again, pay the expenses of hosting us there. And we don't have fancy hosting, but and making us feel very welcome. I don't think the big foundations like the Ford Foundation or the Gates Foundation really support these kind of programs. Perhaps they do. But it would be wonderful if those organizations might support these grassroots music programs. And in Brazil, there have been big music and social projects too. But that's what I'd like to see for the future. And also being able to travel to more cities within the country, because it's so hard for some of the students are in school, hard for them to travel. And there aren't, in Ecuador, there aren't many flights or airlines internally. So again, it might mean 6 or 8 hours driving over the mountains or taking a bus to get to a festival. I think with the challenges that these countries again are facing with economics and other issues, it's hard for people to think that it's of supporting a small music project or small music program. But that's what I'd love to see in the future. It's not my project, it's us. I think one way what we can do is to, again, help our colleagues in other countries with their projects, rather than going in and imposing something external. Let's support what's going on in those countries with what we can.
I like that a lot.
I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. And I think it's very interesting, this idea that you are there to support. And I think you're right with maybe sometimes we could see music as not as important as other issues. But I guess when you bring something like music, you also bring everything up, you know. It's not gonna do any wrong in the world to have more music, that's for sure.
Hey everybody, so yeah, that was a pretty nice interview, and if you want to see more of this interview, we have a full extended interview, about 15-20 more minutes interview with the Wendy Rolf on patreon.com/theflutechannel. There you can watch it for free. Our interviews are there for you to watch for free. And also two additional interviews that Wendy conducted with some of the organizers at in Ecuador. So that was pretty cool. It's always interesting to see people traveling and doing, volunteering and going out there and doing stuff like that in different parts of the world where, you know, there's so many people. We have so many people in South America that watch our show and, and other places too that we never thought people would watch. And so, like, you know, it's obvious to see that people are wanting to have people and learn the flute everywhere, you know, with not just us, but with others like Wendy and other musicians like that.
Mm-hmm. And, so I think it's beautiful to see that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That totally.
The flute is... And there are flutes everywhere. Like there's the flute that we play, but there are also flutes everywhere, and a lot of people play those flutes too.
Oh, it's true.
And
In the extended interview, you guys talk a lot about a couple of South American or Latin instruments.
Yeah,
it's pretty interesting.
Wendy plays a couple of them, and it's a beautiful instrument, and it's good to go out and help people who want to learn it and want to have better instruments too, stuff. Yeah,
and it's not just teenagers or kids and stuff like that. Adults too. Everybody can learn at any time. You know, even Wendy, like you said, she's learning new instruments from those new flute instruments from those areas. Even now, you know, it's all about being curious and, you know, being curious musically and creatively, and it's quite wonderful. So yeah,
and it was a beautiful experience too in Boston.
Totally, what a great time.
Also, like, I encourage anyone who would be interested in having me give a little masterclass or concert or both, or participate in something with their flute club or their flute association, or
absolutely
to just reach out, because it's always very interesting experience for us to go and meet people and teach, and
it's absolutely
very, very cool experience, and I wish to do it more. So
for sure.
Don't be shy.
Yeah, for sure. And also, yeah, it's the one element, like we've been always discussing since we've had the channel, is the last element is actually being with people that want to or know about us and want to know more about us in person. You know, it's a very fabulous feeling. We bridge the gap between, you know, online and real life. And it's just we meet a lot of beautiful people and a lot of passionate people about music and about life in general. And so, yeah, it's we encourage you to reach out, you know, and we'll be sure to reach out back. So, yeah, let's do some questions. Let's get back to the regular schedule of things. So if you have any questions, and if you're watching this live in the on YouTube right now, be sure to leave a comment in the or a question in the chat on the right of the video. Phoenix Piccolo, or Piccolo Phoenix, what's wrong with me today? I'm inverting my words. Piccolo Phoenix, do you have any recommendations on professional level flutes on a budget, and what things to look for in a professional level flute?
You want to answer that?
I can answer a little bit, and then you can fire away as well. So yeah, you know, a budget, you know, first, what is your budget? You know, what is your budget? Or, you know, what is that? If it's $1,000 US, you have a certain, you know, threshold, and usually those are not professional instruments. But once you get past maybe 2,700, maybe 3,000, you still can get good mid-level flutes. That's a whole different market that have great flutes as well. There's like the mid-level or mid price range, or middle, mid-professional rather, and then professional.
Like you would call that maybe an intermediate.
Intermediate, level? There's different words for it for sure. Exactly, and so set that budget first, but like things to look for is like, but you want to have at least the whole body.
Sorry, I want to ask a question. Let's say you you want a professional flute. What's the minimum budget for that, would you say?
No, I couldn't say that. You know, like 8, really anything.
Or
like I said, the mid range for intermediate, 2,700, 3,000 is where that is, and then assumingly after 3,000 is professional. You know, like really, like to find a base level professional model. But like you have to look for things that, but the things to look for really are the elements in the flute, right? So you want to have a flute, basic professional flutes have all, you know, sterling silver, Britannia silver, not sterling silver. Maybe sterling silver. It's just high end, the number of like 0.99299. There's so many numbers and different types of things. It's like going to a car dealership sometimes, you know, and you want to make sure that's at least all silver, basic. And if you want like special things like gold body instead of, or aramite body or any of those types of things, those are going to be assumingly way more expensive, like 10,000 and up range sometimes, you know, and even higher and higher. So like look for like, you know, you want to have, right now there's not many inline Gs, which is like all the keys in line in the main middle part of the flute. That doesn't really exist now. It's sort of an extended or an additional fee now. It used to actually be the opposite. It used to have a lot of inlines, and then now offset has become the norm and usually is built into the price and not an add-on feature. So if you want that for sake of comfort, you'll have to ask them to get a flute with that inline thing. So what you really kind of want to look for is like E facilitator or E... high E
splitty,
that's right, splitty. And then you want to have make sure you have a B foot. It's not imperative, it's not like it's needed, but most flutes now all have a B foot at the foot joint, which is an extended and another key. And what else do you need to look for really? You want to have make sure you have a good that the head joint itself is you know, professionally cut. I know Yamaha has like 4 or 5 different cuts. And I know other brands might have similar types of features, like a different head joint for the body they can interchange before you try it. That's mainly probably with just Yamaha, but like Haynes and Powell and all those other flutes, they all have different types of head joints, and no head joint is alike a lot of the time in the professional world. So you want to kind of make sure that those elements are all there. That's really it. That's baseline, like baseline. Splitty, but that usually comes with offset G and that type of thing. Then you have extended things. If you want a real true professional flute, you want to find something that has a C-sharp trill, because some people like having that. Those are all extended features they can ask for, or sometimes might be lucky and it's already built into the flute that you're trying. So those are kind of the elements you need to look for. At least silver, all silver, like the whole silver body. Silver keys, if they don't have silver keys, sometimes they just do, they try to lessen the price sometimes with professional or low professional and make the keys not silver. But if you have all silver, usually it's good to have all of that like that. So that's it, really. Can't really think of anything else that's imperative in that.
Some flutes also have the little roller for the pinky,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, you can have those rollers for the right hand. Yeah, most professional flutes now do have rollers, which is great. I would probably encourage probably to have that, because it does help, and you don't want to always grease up your nose and go back and forth. But it's not like a perfect thing. A roller on a... It's not perfect, right? Like most of those things, like it's...
I have a pretty basic professional flute.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fine, I think.
Yeah, totally.
But like, yeah, of course, if you get something... more upscale, it's going to be even easier to do some things like the C-sharp trill key and
all those things. Yeah,
yeah, that's cool if you can afford it. But
yeah, but there are budget level professionals. There are, you know, starting tier. So many starting tier in every brand: Yamaha, the Powell,
Dizhou,
Burkhardt. You know, all those types of flutes. If you're in the U.S., you're going to have the biggest selection of that stuff, so it's always wise to look at the base level of that, of each professional model. And it's also okay when you go to a store to ask them, oh, what is your lowest level professional? You know, mm-hmm. they want to sell, so, and they want to help you, so be sure to ask for that, and then see, and then do research. And usually there's practice rooms in music shops, so you can sit there and practice a little bit on these flutes and try them out. Or there's also, I'm sure there's probably lenders or, like, you know, trying to try out at music shops as well, like do a trial.
Mm-hmm.
And where you can always check that out.
It's good too, if you go and try flutes, mm-hmm. maybe bring someone with you so that you have an external ear.
That's good too, to
be like, you try them without saying what it is and which one sounds better, because at the end sometimes you're hesitating between two head joints or whatever.
It would be great if you have another musician there with you, but you could bring anybody, because you want to have another ear, you know, and anything besides yourself will be helpful, I'm sure, to a certain degree. So hopefully that answers your question. If you have if you want to extend on that question, write it down in the comments here and we'll try to elaborate on that later. But what else do we got here? We have, there's a lot of people in the comments here. This is great. Pedro Enrique Baptista de Oliveira. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. Hi, I'm Pedro from Brazil and a flute student. Have you played the music Tico Tico no Fuba? It is a type of music called Chorino. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing.
Chorino. Oh, I don't know. I've heard about that.
Yeah, so have I. I've heard of that style.
But I didn't play it.
Yeah, but we should look into it.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
You know, like, again... What's so fabulous about what Wendy did is go to these places and, you know, experience the music from there, which is so, like, not just the music from there historically, the music there culturally right now as mm-hmm. well. It's not the same as in America or in Canada. There's some similarities, like she was mentioning, but...
No, but there's also, like, music that's based off...
The heritage.
Folkloric music
evolved
from that or... Yeah, it's super interesting.
Yeah, so that's what's so great about that. So, yeah, we'll have to check out what that music that they just mentioned, Pedro, we'll look into and listen to a little bit.
Yeah, because I've heard about it before. It's interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Saludos, saludos a todos.
Desde, oh, Guayaquil, Ecuador. Oh, that's so cool.
Nice. That's that's a cool thing. I wonder if you heard about the festival that...
Oh, that is right there. Festival de Flautas Perlo de Pacifico. Oh, they're in the chat.
Nice.
That's cool. Saludos a todos. Wendy in the Flute Channel. Desde, oh, that's so cool. Yeah, you know, like, it was so cool hearing the stories from her. And it really paints a picture about how passionate the people are there about music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the students and the teachers and that whole area, like, you know, everybody's just trying to, especially in South America, trying to get out of those situations that they're in money-wise and all those types of things. And bringing music and bringing art and culture really kind of helps bring...
Mm. Helps, I think music was already there forever, because music is in every culture.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's like, not what I mean. I meant more like, just saying, like, what's great is that that's... yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's fun to see that the flute is thriving everywhere and that we're trying to be a worldwide community, I guess, you know, helping each other out to make our instrument thrive and live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, like, what else is... if you guys have any more questions or anything like that about what we do or anything like that, leave that in the comments. But I just wanted to say, like... some of the things we've been doing in the past couple of months is we've now, for Patreon and also just for YouTube in general, we've kind of moved a lot of our content there for people to have more of a less commercial-free experience. I just wanted to kind of elaborate on that and to go there and help us out in that regard over on Patreon, because we just find that a lot of people over the past couple of months, we've had enough time to read some people's emails and comments about how kind of the commercial experience is a bit rough now on YouTube, and it's like sometimes very, very disruptive in their learning when they're watching one of our videos. So be sure, if you can, you know, go to patreon.com/theflutechannel and you can pay there to have our whole entire archive and even videos in advance up to a month or even more of what we put on YouTube. So, you know, it's a nice community there. We're trying to, you know, push the learning experience to be a bit more smoother for people and less disruptive, because now more and more we feel that the commercials, especially on YouTube and stuff, are kind of disruptive on the learning experience. So be sure to go there and also check out those interviews that we just did right now and everything. That's free, but the extended archive and stuff like that of all of our stuff, it's $5 a month. And if you can't do that, you can also just tip us $2 a month and you get some of those features as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, because, like, yeah, some people might want to have the commercial free and also help us out. So yeah. that's a cool thing
we
can offer.
Exactly. And we have a lot of other things planned, hopefully, to add to the experience there and as well as here on YouTube to a degree as well. So, yeah. What else do we got here? Limira, SP Brazil. I think I read that already, but the content is very good, especially coming from a super professional person. Congratulations. Oh, thanks. Yeah, we've been doing this for quite a long time. So we've been doing it since late 2014, 2015, and we want to do more, and we try to bring that to you as easily as possible, and we're excited with some of the new content we're going to have. And also the album is coming out very soon. Emily's going to be doing the 12 Fantasias of Telemann. And that's going to be a whole entire release this month. Hopefully, maybe at the end of November sometime. We have a tentative date, but we're still working it out and getting it all done. But what's so exciting about it is that it's going to be an album and also the sheet music with your own... ornamentations and your own thoughts and stuff like that. It's really a whole experience product, really, you know, album plus sheet music plus other little things, and we're really excited about that. It's been about over a year in of work,
yeah,
and we're excited to bring that out to you to enjoy.
Yeah, because I wanted to record them, but then I also realized that some students, when you give them the Earth text, which is the version with no articulation,
mm-hmm.
no dynamics, nothing, they were a bit confused, even if I said you can choose your articulations and add them, or when right. you do a repeat, you can add ornaments. So I thought, I'll make my own version. This way people can play my ornaments, or it can inspire them
exactly
to do their own, but kind of reverse engineer from where how I did it mm-hmm. and be like, okay, now I'm going to do my own, but I'm going to, you know, like mm-hmm. I said, reverse engineer from my edition that exactly. I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I think that's a cool thing.
Oh, it's excellent. It's going to be a great product.
Useful for people and fun for us to do because had fun learning all of them and mm-hmm. recording them and mm-hmm. they're gorgeous, the Telemann Fantasies.
Yeah. And it's going to be a very good album and everyone's going to, I hope, really enjoy it. So, yeah. I think there was just one or two other little things and that's...
And if you have questions about anything flute related, it can also be about any technical aspect of flute playing or anything like that.
Yeah.
You can leave it now or for our next podcast.
Exactly. And so like, and also just a heads up that there'll be a new video coming out on the channel on November 10th, I think. It's going to be about Taffineau and Gobert. You're going to do a whole series about Taffineau and Gobert. 17 big daily exercises or seven? I don't know how many, I forget.
It's 17.
Yeah, 17 daily exercises. You're going to do the first one, and then that's going to be a whole series about how you kind of approach each one of those numbers, and it's quite amazing. I think I looked through it and I've been editing those, and just it's quite amazing, a great resource, because like you were saying about the Telemann with Urtex, it's sort of the same thing with the Taffineau Gobert. You just get the book sometimes and then you hear about it all the time, but you never had a teacher, but you hear about it through other people and then you have the book and you're like, what do I do?
You know?
So that's
I kind of explain how to practice it.
Oh, you do explain it for sure. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And how it's built so that if you understand the sequence, you know,
it's
a bit easier to learn and how to learn it. In an effective way, I guess.
Totally.
So, yeah, I think that's cool. We'll do it with all of them.
Yeah. So, again, thanks, everybody. I think this will be the culmination of the show, but we're going to be back in the last Sunday of December. And we'll let you know about that on the YouTube channel and our socials. Also, just be sure to... Oh, I can't remember what else is there going to be. Also, just be sure to check out the links in the description. I'm going to be updating them right after the show with all the links to all the extended interviews with Wendy and Wendy interviewing the organizers over in Ecuador as well. So just be a little patient about that in about 5-10 minutes, and then you can come and see all those in the description box below this video and also in the podcast description as well when that comes out tomorrow. So thanks so much, everybody, for joining in. It's been very fun. It was great to hear Wendy again and talk to her. And hopefully we'll be talking to her again in the future. And I think that's about it, huh?
Yeah.
Also, go to our store. Go to musigy.com and find our method. Emily has both her beginner and intermediate method. It's going to be coming up to that time of the season. And we won't be able to talk about it until after Christmas. But it's a great gift for budding flutists or, you know, people who want to learn. If you're hesitant on the program, we've had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sales and great communication with and reviews with people about that. So be sure to go check out that, the beginner method and the intermediate method.
It's an all-in-one. You don't have to buy other books because everything's in it, the rhythm and sight reading and sound exercises and technique. It's all in there.
In video, you have video of you talking, the PDF, you also have playback tracks and practice tracks. We've been very, very happy with that product and very, very happy that we've been making a difference for a lot of people. And it's very good for the budget-friendly person, but it's still a very high level of instruction. And we really, really appreciate it if you want to do that and go to musigy.com, musogy.com. All that will be linked in the description. So yeah, thanks, Emily, so much for being here.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to you guys later. Have a good one.